Well, good evening, everybody. I am Jacob Winograd, host of the Biblical Anarchy Podcast here in the LCI Green Room, live streaming to you on Twitter, on Facebook, and on YouTube. And if you're watching on YouTube, please make sure to subscribe and give this video a like, because it helps with all those good algorithms. Tonight, I have a very special guest, someone who I've been following, been friends with for a while in the Libertarian movement, Libertarian Party. He is Mr. Joshua Smith, who is running for the nomination of president for the Libertarian Party. Josh, how you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing just fine, man. Got all the kids fed. And then that's it's up to Julia to get them to sleep. You know what I mean? So I'm good.
My wife is upstairs doing the same thing. Now, how many do you have at home right now currently?
We have seven. We have seven in the house. So
seven in the house.
Yeah, seven that are 12 and under.
Yeah, we got four that are nine and under, and the fifth one will be here in July. So, I mean, we're starting to catch up. We're shooting for that title.
You'll get there, buddy. You'll get there. It'll take you a while, but you'll get there. You know what I mean? You're still a lot younger than me too, right? So you got some time.
Yeah. I'm 31, so we got time. Yeah,
I'm 10 years older than you. So
I've been watching every when you started your podcast, Break the Cycle. I was a huge fan of it. Would watch it. I always try to make sure I could catch it live every night you were going. I remember you talking about when you had your old setup at your old house, how you had your studio in the one half and then the other half with like the kids play stuff. And I'm literally, that is my current setup, because like a third of the basement is mine. And then like right beyond my computer monitor is just like a mountain of like kids stuff. They have a tent out right now and a little like Lego fortress and stuff. It's like,
yeah, I was very blessed to get the new house where I have like a full dedicated like built studio that's just for the podcast.
It's amazing, man.
Yeah,
man,
it's so much
you got a nice, such a professional setup. Something I envy. You know, and something I really have admired about you as long as I've been watching you, in the years that you've been involved in the party, and obviously you're both in the Mises Caucus, is that you have put a lot of work into setting your house in order. Like, I was a big Jordan Peterson guy. Jordan Peterson, as bad as he is in foreign policy these days, I will always love the man for the role he played in my life. He helped kind of, he was there when I was coming out of the left and was trying to like remake my political ideology, remake my philosophical and sort of religious ideology. And Jordan Peterson was instrumental in that. And like one of his basic rules is, you know, clean your room, set your house in perfect order. And you did that, and you did that in just unbelievably tough circumstances, while you were under a lot of intense persecution because of the consequences of being involved in politics. But you didn't let it crush you. Instead, you came back stronger and got your family and your house, everything under one roof. And I just think that's, you know, an incredible testimony that you get to give to people. And then you also have, you know, you were baptized in last year, right?
It's been in the last year, maybe year and 2 months or so. It's a really cool story too. I've been wanting to get baptized for quite some time now, for people that don't know, we adopted two kids in October of 2020. They're actually the younger siblings of my oldest daughter, who I got custody of in 2022. That's part of the, you know, getting my house in order thing that you're talking about. Is I've been fighting to get custody for 10 years, and I was finally blessed to get it. And along with her came her two younger siblings that aren't ours biologically, but we were happy to take them, and they've been with us for almost 4 years now. My ex-wife and my oldest daughter's mom and these kids' mom was super anti-Christian, mad at God for everything. I saw a post today on Twitter that really resonated with me. It says, I've never met an atheist that actually doesn't believe in God. They're just mad at them. And that's the truth. Like, there's so many people in the atheist movement that are really just mad at God and blame God for all the ills of society and all the problems in their life. And so she was mad, and basically, you know, God was the devil to her and had raised her children that way. And my 12-year-old son, we were going to church. You know, we go to church every Sunday. I was working a lot of Sundays. I couldn't always go. My family's always in church. You know, we would invite them, and they didn't want to go, you know. And it's like, that's fine. We're not going to force you to go. You know what I mean? We're not going to force you to be at church and force you to listen to the word of God. But just so you know, they do have cookies and lemonade on Sunday mornings that you guys can have if you come to church with us, and it's free and you don't have to worry about it. And so, you know, somewhere down the line, my boy, because the at the time, 6-year-old girl who's now nine, almost 10, she started going with us pretty quickly and then started reading the Bible and was like really kind of enthralled by the Bible and enjoyed it. And she's kind of found God on her own, which was really nice at a young age, you know. But my boy, he decided one day, I want to go to church with you guys. I'll go to church with you. And he started going to the youth groups and he really enjoyed it. He was 9 at the time, maybe 10 when he started coming with us. And, you know, fast forward a couple years and he's like, Dad, I want to get baptized. And I was like, I'll get baptized with you. We'll do it together. You know what I mean? I'll go in there with you and we'll give our testimony together. And so, we did. And he loves it. And now he, you know, both kids have been in Awana for like 3 years, 2.5 years. My son now is in like the older kids, like middle school youth group, loves it, goes every Wednesday, really enjoys the word. I mean, it's funny because he's kind of become conservative as well. And I think along with Christian principles, you kind of become more conservative, at least in your personal life. You know, there's these things where you believe the word and you want to follow the word. And it's got to change your life if you want to follow the word. It's just how it works. And so he's like, as I tell the story a lot, it's really funny, but last year in sixth grade, the teacher was having them every day. They did 20 minutes of CNN. They had to watch CNN in class. And he came home. He's like, Dad, I don't really want to watch CNN. It seems like they're kind of lying to me, you know? And we have talks about politics and culture and things that are going on in the world all the time. And I try to tell him, you know, what I believe is the truth, at least. And so it was kind of just funny for him to come to his own conclusion on that. And I said, well, you don't have to watch it. You shouldn't have to watch it if you don't want to. They can't make you watch it. And he said, okay, well, what should I say? I said, tell your teacher your dad said you can't watch CNN every day. And so he told the teacher that, and the teacher started putting him in the hallway during CNN 20 minutes, and he gets to go sit out there in the hallway by himself. And one day he came home, he's like, I don't really like sitting in the hallway. This is unfair that they make me sit in the hallway, but I don't want to watch CNN. And I said, all right, Dad. Well, I said, all right, bud. Well, why don't you ask your teacher next time you guys start CNN, the 20 minutes, why don't you ask him if instead you can watch Alex Jones? See what he says. And so he actually did ask his teacher, can I watch Alex Jones? Can we watch Alex Jones instead? And he goes, why would you want to watch Alex Jones? This is the first question, you know? And he told him, you know, it's because he's going to tell me the truth. I want to hear the truth. Can we watch Alex Jones? He said, we're absolutely not watching Alex Jones in there. I believe not long after that, they quit doing the CNN 20 minutes. in class. So, but he wears a taxation as theft hat to work or to school a lot, which I think is funny. And he's always getting comments from teachers because, you know, their salary is paid by taxes. And these two children, for you guys who don't know, one of the stipulations of us bringing them to our home was that the state required we put them in a public education system of some sort so that they had monitoring. So there are only two kids that actually go to a public school. And so it's actually fun for me because my son is so like he's already like a libertarian at heart. He came to it on his own mostly, but I mean, with me just trying to explain things in like a loving fatherly kind of way, not like forcing any of my views on him. But you bring up Jordan Peterson, and this is about a year and a half ago, he showed up to school with a airsoft gun that his cousin gave him without us knowing. And that's bad. I mean, like he got caught with it. He could have gotten they could have put him on probation and done all this stuff to him. But they let him off easy. He just got suspended for like 2 days or whatever. And, so he was grounded for 60 days. I'm like, you're grounded for 60 days unless, and this is what I want you to do. I want you to read this book. And I handed him the 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson. I said, I want every chapter. I want you to stop at the end of the chapter, write a summary of the chapter and why that rule is important to your life. And I'm going, kid's going to be grounded for 60 days. There's no way he's going to do this. And it probably 13 days in, maybe less, he came to me and said, all right, Dad, I got it all written out. You want me to read it to you? I said, yeah, I want you to read it to me. And man, it was like one of the most proudest, like fatherly moments I'd ever had because he literally a full paragraph summary of every chapter, why the rule was important in his life. Specifically, it had to be like to him, right? And he did such a wonderful job and he's so well-spoken and smart. And he, you know, he was invited and accepted to be in like the GATE program this year. So he's like gifted and talented. This is a kid who never went to school till the fourth grade, no kind of education whatsoever. So it was really cool. It's a really cool moment for me. And, you know, to get baptized with him in you know, in front of God and Jesus in the congregation and give our testimony was really, really great. And, you know, I've kind of moved away a little bit from the evangelical, like, kind of churchy you know, thing. I still go on Sundays sometimes, but I'm moving more towards the Orthodox religion. And I know you've seen me talk about that and Orthodoxy and why I think it's, you know, it won't cuck to the social left of the West. And
yeah,
and that's a good thing. But I still go to that church sometimes too. So,
yeah, you know, it's such a tough thing. And I'm kind of, I understand what you mean by that, because so I find myself blessed by being at a very good Protestant church that didn't, I mean, they had no choice but to kind of shut down because they don't own their building. Our church meets in a YMCA and sure, like a joint partnership, but like they would have stayed open if they could have. As soon as they were able to come back, they did, and they encouraged people to meet in their homes. They were not enforcing mask mandates or anything like that. And they're very good on, you know, like they're on the right side of all these culture war issues. But when you look at Protestantism,
few and far between right now, dude.
Right. If you look at Protestantism as a whole across the country, it's a mess. Yeah. And I understand why a lot of Christians, a lot of conservatives are looking more towards those, you know, those older traditions of, because you can to some extent, you know, trace certain tendencies in Protestantism to liberalism and liberalism to kind of what we have today. And, you know, I guess on that, you know, regardless of sort of like the intra, you know, squabbles between in Christianity, which are interesting, but not necessarily what we're here to talk about. But as
the funny thing is that all the differences are so minute, they're so little, and
tiny. Oh, they are. And what's funny is that like sometimes I'll get people, certain Protestants who get really caught up on that will give me crap because they'll think I'm being too friendly with the Catholics and the Orthodox. But I'm just like, we. Like honestly, like other than like, you know, the role of church authority and things like that, and maybe like slightly different views on the sacrament, but like on the majors, like we agree. Like there is too much stuff going on in the world right now for us to be enemies and not to be uniting as a united, like the church, the body of Christ. Right. And I think so. One of the things I like about you being in the race, you being in politics in general, is that. And this is something that you've grown into, is that you very much understand which is something that I have always been trying to push, is that libertarianism is just nowhere close to enough. It's just not. Without Christianity, libertarianism becomes this like do what thou wilt. It becomes very hedonistic. It adopts like a libertine social ethic. And I mean, we saw what those forces did to just the Libertarian Party. And, you know, if we were going to have, if you're going to imagine that scaling out to the entire country, I mean, it's that would not work at all. And so your campaign, although you're doing it within the Libertarian Party, the way it comes across to me is like you're not even like, unlike a lot of libertarians who sort of like are bleeding heart libertarians, you're kind of like, no, like I'm a Christian, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm an American first guy. And yeah, like, you know, then 80% of your platform or more is like libertarian ideas, because libertarian economics and understanding libertarian views of governance are mostly right. But like you've done a good job in your platform of like fusing these things together in a way that is actually like I can't, you know, to people in my congregation, if we had other, you know, and also disclaimer, Libertarian Christian Institute is a, you know, 501c3. We don't make any political endorsements or whatnot, but just me personally, if I was going to someone at my church and being like, hey, you should vote libertarian, and the top of the ticket is Chase Oliver, I'm not going to be able to sell that to anybody at my church. I'm not going to be able to sell that to people in my workplace. You know what I mean? But you're someone that I can, you know, share the things you say, share the content you produce to people I work with, the people I go to church with, because you're presenting libertarian ideas, but you're presenting them in a cultural package that I think that actually resonates with people, because it speaks to them where they're at, speaks to their values.
Sure. And I try very, 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 very hard to sell my libertarian principles to sell my Christian principles. Let's back it up. To sell my Christian principles in a way that is libertarian. You know, when I attack the angle of pro-life, you know, which I am the only pro-life candidate in this country today, right now. I'm the only one. That's it. Unless you, I mean, I guess you can consider Toad as well, which is fine. But I'm the only one that thinks that, you know, murder is bad and should be illegal. I'm the only one. I'm the, there is no other candidate running for any party today that believes this. And, you know, I get a lot of this, well, you're just a Christian nationalist. And I'm like, yeah, maybe there's some merit to that, right? Maybe there's some merit to me being a Christian nationalist. And you know what, for all intents and purposes, I don't have a huge problem with Christian nationalism, but I don't believe that it needs to be forced on everybody, but I do believe that people need to be told they're not allowed to murder or they'll be punished. But I've been able to kind of sell that principle as a libertarian principle, because, you know, we are so big on the right to life, right? I mean, when you think about it, the Constitution tells us that we have the right to life. The Christian principles tell us that we have the right to life. Libertarian principles tell us we have the right to life. And if we don't extend that to the most vulnerable citizens in the world, which, you know, are the unborn and the old and feeble and infirm, then we're not really truly interested in protecting the people's right to life. And so, you know, a million babies are murdered every year. A million in the United States. That's an insane amount of babies. And it's been sold to us as this, you know, oh, it's a freedom to choose issue. It's a rights issue. It's, you know, you can't say that or you're not a libertarian. And I believe the very opposite. I believe that if you're selling that it should be okay to murder the unborn child, then you're not a libertarian. Then you don't actually care about the right to life. And so I've been able to sell it in that light. And I think it's done really well. But, you know, at the end of the day, my principles are very important to me, right? And you know, to me personally, in my life especially, Christian principles are always going to be first. And so, like, I can't run a campaign that, like, goes directly against my own principles, right? Like, that would just make no sense whatsoever. And so, you know, some of these things I'm trying to show in a new light. I'm trying to make it not about, oh, conservatives that want to control a woman's body. I'm making it about Americans who actually value life at all levels, Americans who actually value impressionable children and don't want them to be harmed by medical and healthcare professionals that have started this trendy for-profit mutilative surgery and medicine phase of America. And so, like, I've been able to kind of wrap those in the libertarian principles. And I think that's why we've done well. It's funny because I see people say things similar to me online, but from a different angle. And, you know, the losers and the loser brigade of the libertarian sphere really go after those people, really attack. They never come and attack me on those principles. It's because I've wrapped them in a way that if you're going to argue with me, you better steel man your arguments, because I've made them libertarian principles. I've created this, like, culture, this cultural issue around, you know, my Christian principles, but also what I think is the right thing to do, and wrap them in libertarian principles. So it's hard to argue against those. And I think we need to, as libertarians, we should all be looking at ways to do the right thing all the time and sell that as the libertarian talking point. So I'm glad that you understand that. And I know others do too. I think it's a big part of the campaign, and it's really what sets me apart from the other candidates entirely. I mean, the whole field of candidates, whether you like Rechtenwald, whether you like Lars or Chase or Termott or any of these guys, none of them are selling the principles that way. None of them. And I don't care what anybody says. They just aren't, you know? And so I think we need more libertarians that are doing that at all levels.
Oh yeah. I 100% agree. I mean, I mean, I like Toad, but Toad is doing Toad thing. I mean, it's not the, you know.
Toad is only here to tell the libertarians that they suck. That's it.
Right.
That's
all. Which I'm here for it, right? But it's just it's a different. He's playing like, he actually is playing 3D chess while everyone else is playing checkers. You could say that's maybe giving him a little bit too much credit, but yeah, I mean, the only two candidates that I would be excited to sell right now are you and Rechtenwald. But Rechtenwald, although I agree with him on, you know, basically everything, and I think you would agree with Rechtenwald on most things too, his presentation is, you know, it is a stark difference from your presentation. And I think that Rechtenwald does speak well to people who are very much, like, intellectually driven in terms of, like, yeah, like, they're going to sit down and read books and they're well versed in libertarian theory. And I'm not saying he can't message well, but I think your message is more targeted to the people that I'm interacting with on a daily basis. Like, if I went to, like, I work in the automotive field, so I'm a transmission specialist for Ford. So I'm around, you know, blue collar workers all day long. And if I'm going to try to sell them on a libertarian candidate, and I'm putting really any, not just not the pick on Rechtenwald, again, any of the candidates really, and put them up against you, you're someone that they're immediately going to resonate with, and not just like just you as a person, you as you and your energy, you and your personality, and then you and your message as well. And yeah, I think that one thing that I think that other candidates could learn to do better, you know, like as soon as this whole Christ is King sort of saga went down, when Candace Owens left the Daily Wire, like you jumped on that so quickly, came out with like Christ is King, like branding and stuff, you know, related to Break the Cycle and the campaign. And I think that, yeah, like having a candidate out there who is going to respond to these, you know, societal trends and cultural trends, who was a Christian and who is not afraid to be a Christian. You know, I've seen that too often from like some of the candidates are Christian, but you've seen some of their answers when they're asked about it. They'll be like, "Oh, I'm a Christian, but you know, that's a totally separate, different thing. Like, you know, we're here to talk about libertarian stuff." And I'm just like, okay, I'm not saying you need to go and be a preacher, but if you don't understand, like, to give the Christian nationalists their due, kind of like you were saying there, I don't agree with the Christian nationalists' ideas on balance, but just the basic notion that, like, this country would do better and would honestly, there'd be a less demand for the state if it was a Christian nation, is just not a premise that I can pick any holes in. And I think,
I want to do something right now that I haven't done in any other shows or interviews or podcasts or any of the debates. There's so many people like you in the party today that are going to be delegates to the national convention that are saying the same thing. Either Rec or Josh, look, we are a month and a half out from the nomination. I want you to stop doing that. Stop doing that now and choose. Stop putting us both up in the same light. Okay. And I'm not just talking to you. I'm talking to everybody else who feels the same way. Stop putting us in the light. We are different. We are very different. We differ on abortion. We differ on how proud we are to talk about our religious principles and our faith. We differ on family issues. We differ on a lot of policy, a lot. I know some people might not see that, but if you listen to what we're saying, there is a big difference there. And there's a huge, glaring gap in the way that we deliver those messages, as you were saying. And I mean, to the point of where I love Hans Hermann Hoppe. Okay. I'm a huge fan of Hans Hoppe, right? Like I got pictures of him all over the studio here. It's got, not, I don't idolize anybody. Okay. But I love Hoppe. I don't want Hoppe to run for president, man. You know what I mean? Like he's really good at like a room full of people who have read his books and read Rothbard and who are kind of already on our ideals, but like he doesn't sell the message to non like supporters very well. You know what I mean? We need somebody who does that. We need a blue collar family person. That's
you wouldn't
go
start
out
someone on Hoppe.
No, of course not. And so I feel the same about Rechtenwald. Like I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, to my cousin who like never heard a libertarian ideal before, like, yeah, check out Michael Rechtenwald. And they're going to show up and he's going to be like, oh, yeah. You know, he's going to start going off on and on and on and about all these deep state conspiracies and stuff, which I think is important. Don't get me wrong. Just know your audience, right? My people, like normal, everyday, blue collar people, be like, that guy's crazy. We're not going to listen to this guy. We're definitely not voting for this guy. It's too much for me. You know what I mean? But like, I resonate with the Christians. I resonate with the blue collar. I resonate with the family people. Dude, I resonate with fathers who have been dragged through the family law system, which are millions and millions and millions of people across the United States. We're doing, you know, 5 to 7 million hits on social media a week right now. Like it's working. Like we're doing what I said I was going to do. We're doing a lot like what I wanted to see out of a presidential candidate. Should it have been a Dave Smith run, right? Like maybe I'm not as cool as Dave Smith or as funny as Dave Smith, but we're reaching that crowd that we want to reach. And we're talking to some really big names about getting on shows and doing all the things that we wanted to see. So I'm doing that without the help of the MC this year. I'm doing that without the help of Dave Smith at all. I mean, he won't even mention my name anymore. And I think that's a huge deal to like make that separate, to like say like, okay, you know, I used to say if it was Rec or Josh, but now I'm saying it's Josh or Rec, if that's what you want. You know what I mean? But I think we need to really hone in on this going into the national convention in D.C. It's just a month and a half away, man. It's time. Well, no more riding the fence, guys. We got to pick now because we got to show up to that convention confident and ready to go, man, because we want to hit that 50-state media tour as soon as it's over.
Right. And like I said, I can't make endorsements from this podcast, and but I will agree with what you're saying that as much as, and what I was saying to be clear was, I think in terms of candidates that I would support if they were on the ticket, sure, it would be you and Rec. And then after that, listen, I like Termat, but I just don't think that he's someone that's going to run a good campaign, would be good branding for the LP, and everyone else would be, but you know, Termat would be less disastrous than the rest of them. The only people who I think would not be disastrous and who would actually do a good job would be you and Rechtenwald. But you are playing, although I think there's overlap, you are correct, there are very different, you know, games you're playing. The one on the issue of abortion is something that, you know, you actually just released a little video today on social media, which you shared, and I reshared, and you kind of, you know, touched on this about 10 minutes ago. But on the topic of abortion, you know, listen, I understand the Christian or pro-life ANCAP position, which is like, yeah, abortion should be banned, but in terms of like strategy and implementation, you know, should we be focusing on federal level bans or focusing on state? Like, I get that. But if you're running for president, rather than obfuscating the issue by trying to like, well, we're going to talk about abortion, but also we're going to like try to talk in like that's just not, that's going to go over people's heads. And they're not going to come down with the conclusion of, oh, they're pro-life, but they want different implementation. They're going to probably, because you have the word libertarian associated with you, just assume that you're finding a weaselly way to be pro-choice. And so I think that, you know, this is a criticism that I think is fair to give to Rechtenwald, is that even though he tries to kind of say I'm pro-life and then couch it, I don't think that's going to resonate with a lot of the conservative pro-life Christian population, because they're not, you know, listen, like if you make them libertarians first, then there's a little bit of nuance there that I'll grant people in terms of how you would implement a libertarian policy on abortion. But the full stop in terms of what the messaging campaign should be in terms of like, you know, what is morally right is to say full stop, abortion is murder. And it should, a civilized society should not allow it or be, you know, permissive to it. Shouldn't be to underplay the evil that abortion is. And it should be, I mean, this is one of the reasons that you know, like the MC attracted me to the Libertarian Party was like, we need to kind of, you know, reshape the branding of the Libertarian Party to get away from this very libertine, very, you know, the sort of ethos that spits in the face or like sticks their nose up in the air to the idea of taking personal responsibility. The idea of like, listen, if you, it's your body, your choice, but if you choose to have sex outside of marriage and you get pregnant before you want to, like, sorry, that doesn't give you, you're now on the hook. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Oh, you're forcing me pregnant. Like, no, you forced yourself to get pregnant. I'm just telling you, you can't kill somebody.
You're on the hook like every man who gets on the hook legally as soon as a baby is made. Oh, shucks. You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, that's really what it is. Look, if you have a baby as a man and you don't want to have that baby, guess what? Nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit. Sorry, excuse my language. I know I'm on the Libertarian Christian show. I do cuss a lot, and for those who don't know that, I was a sailor too. It's hard to get rid of. But every man who has a baby out of wedlock or just from like a random night or anything, right? And the woman decides to keep the baby, that man's on the hook. He has no rights whatsoever when it comes to, you know, to that baby. The state will tell that man what he can do, how he can raise his child, how much money he has to spend. I mean, everything. 100%. The state will dictate how you have to be a father. Okay. But if a woman doesn't want a baby, she just goes down to a place and has the baby murdered. I mean, that's just a glaring inconsistency in principle to begin with. But here's the thing, man. Like, this is a right to life issue. It's not a right to choose issue. And I think that, yeah, you know, the it was purposely painted as a right to choice issue in, you know, in the olden days, we'll call it, when Margaret Sanger created Planned Parenthood and started putting them in black communities, low income black communities, to genocide the black population in the United States. She said this. I mean, this isn't like a conspiracy theory. She was very clear about this. But to get it to happen, they couldn't just be like, go kill your babies, it'll be better for society. They had to say, hey, if you can't afford a baby, you can do this. This is your right. This is your right. But the truth is this is a right to life issue. It's not a right to choose issue. It's not the right to a woman's body issue. That's a separate body. It's a completely separate life with its own being and its own, you know, consciousness. And so no, it's not a right to choose issue. It's a right to life issue. And libertarians have got to be better on this issue. They've got to stop just giving this moderate, like I'm on the fence. Yeah, I'm pro-life, but I don't think we should legislate morality. Like argument is just, it's dead in the water. It does nothing. You're not going to get the left to come and vote for libertarians, period, plain and simple. The people you have to choose from are much more conservative. If you're not going to be strong in this stance, then you're no different than what Trump just put out today. You know what I mean? And it's like, here's the thing. Like, yes, the Republicans and Democrats have to worry about getting elected. We don't got to worry about getting elected in a presidential race, right? So me just dropping principle to try and get elected in 2024 is just a total waste of time. Why wouldn't it? Look, we have very specific goals in this presidential campaign, okay? One of them is to get on big alternative platforms, okay? The biggest alternative media, or the biggest media in the world right now, is alternative media, okay? Joe Rogan, Patrick Bet-David, yeah. Yep. Sean Ryan. Like, these guys are way bigger than CNN, Tucker Carlson. These guys are way bigger than Fox, okay? They have like three times the viewership of CNN, daily viewership. So we want to get in front of America and tell people these principles. But here's the thing, like, if you're just going to sound like the other candidates, then like no one cares. No one's going to care, right? So one of our very like moderate, like achievable goals is to get 5% in this election, okay? 5% will make us, you know, the libertarian king, okay? Nobody's ever gotten 5% in the Libertarian Party. There's a reason for that, because we play this like, oh, well, maybe if we pass the fair tax, and maybe if we just cut a little bit of Social Security, and maybe we'll just roll back a couple of the drug laws, and we won't get rid of this gun law, but this one. But like, why do that when you're not going to get elected anyways? Why not go after that 5% with the strongest, most principled message you can come up with, bravely, without being a coward, say that murder's bad. I know it's a hard principle to understand that murder's bad, but this is the truth. And so like, why wouldn't we go after the people that are jaded today on this issue of abortion? Like, so many people got jaded by the Trump campaign today because they said, it's up to the states now, so we'll never do a national ban on it. But like, there's people out there that want a national ban, dude. There's people out there right now that want a national ban on abortion. And you know what? They're right. It should be illegal. You should go to jail if you perform a murder. That's how it works. And like, so I'm going to go after those people, man. And with like my principles, I'm going to be like, I'm the one candidate in the United States today that will put, that will do a national ban, that will make sure that murder is illegal, that will protect the life, the right to life for unborn children. Like, yeah, I'll do that. And like, why not try to go after that 5%? We're not going to get elected anyways in 2024, but we could get 5%. We could get 10%. We could poll at a Quinnipiac poll at 15% and get on the national debate stage and tell these losers to the right and left of us how much they've destroyed the everyday American blue-collar working class. I could be that guy. So why wouldn't I do that? It's just stupid not to think that way in terms of a campaign that you know you're not going to win anyways. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
And you could, because I understand, like, maybe to steel man the opposing view, you know, someone could say, well, a federal ban is just either A, unlikely, or B, wouldn't be effective, because states, the same way they kind of nullified and didn't enforce like weed laws and stuff, they could do it. But you can kind of just say, listen, like, the federal government should, I mean, one, you can say, like, we should be defunding Planned Parenthood. We should be the government should be absolutely not involved in healthcare, not involved in funding abortion. And really, they should do the opposite. They should, like, you know, through, like, if government's going to be involved in healthcare, they shouldn't be, but if they are going to be, they shouldn't be allowing them to, you know, provide abortion except in like the, you know, 0.01% of cases where it's like, I guess, like a medical necessary early on in the first trimester, health of the mother or something. And then you can also stress the emphasis of the importance of also doing statewide legislation so that they can't circumvent the federal government. Like, you can say the statewide legislation is important. It's another thing to say, to, you know, the language Trump is using is making it, honestly, Trump, if you didn't know it was Trump saying it, just took those words and presented them to like the old libertarian guard they'd be like, oh yeah, that's our platform position, right? Like, you know, just because that's what the old Libertarian Party platform was like, well, abortion's a sensitive issue and it should, you know,
we understand that there's good faith arguments on both sides of this debate,
right?
Is what
it's basically what Trump did, right? It was just like, yeah, well, they, everyone's going to disagree and the states will decide and that'll be the law of the land in those states. It's just like, you know, like you said, like, I mean, if libertarians are going to say we're right about everything, if we're going to say we believe in this idea called the non-aggression principle, but we're kind of undecided if you should kill babies or not, what? Like, it doesn't make, it doesn't hold. And then also, I think that if we want to push, like, the one, like, some of the things that conservatives are getting better on, but still need some work on, is war and understanding the military industrial complex. But if we want to push them on that, then we got to be strong on the pro-life position, because that allows us to be, listen, like, hey, we're right with you. Pro-life, you know, murder is bad. Do not kill anyone, even if it's babies, even if it's unborn babies. And then we could say, and by the way, that also goes for the, you know, the over 50% population of Gaza that is children, that we shouldn't be sending, you know, billions of dollars to Israel to bomb them.
Or the, like, 500,000 dead Iraqi children, or the million Yemeni children caused by our humanitarian crisis that we've caused. I mean, you know, or Somalia or Libya, or, I mean, just it goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And, you know, if you want to call yourself pro-life, that's great. Be pro-life. Be all the way pro-life. All the way pro-life for all people, right? It's kind of like my position on self-defense, right? Like, I've talked a lot about this. I got some heat from even some conservatives over this, where, you know, I said, look, I am not an open borders libertarian, okay? I know that that's where I differ to a lot of libertarians too, but I am absolutely across the board God-given self-defense for all people. I don't care if you've committed a felony in the past and served your penance and been released. If you have a family now, you should have the right to defend that family from people who want to harm them. And so, like, I believe in, you know, gun rights and self-defense rights for all people. And that got me some heat from conservatives. And I'm going, are you pro self-defense? Are you only pro self-defense for you? Because if you're not pro self-defense for everybody, then you're not really pro self-defense. And that's the same way with pro-life. You're either pro-life for everybody or you're not pro-life. That's the truth. That's how it works. And I'm pro-life because God compels me to be pro-life, because I think that everybody has the right to life. I think that, you know, even politically and in our Constitution, like I said, it gives you the right, absolutely the God-given right, protects the God-given right to life. And I don't think you could be pro-life if you're pro-bombing innocent people, if you're pro-shooting innocent people, if you're pro-sucking out living beings from a mother. I mean, if you're pro any of these things, you're not pro-life. Stop calling yourself pro-life. That's not pro-life. Pro-life is across the board pro-life, period. And I'm sick and tired of people being like, oh, I'm pro-life, but there is no but after pro-life. You're either pro-life or you're not. It's a black and white issue. And I'm sick of it being painted as a you know, well, the left dictates this morality and the right dictates this morality. No, like, morality is that you don't kill people if you're pro-life.
Yeah. Libertarianism needs virtue. And I feel like for too long, this whole, it, even from people who were more in, like, the Mises caucus camp, who I feel like should know better, have found themselves falling into, even if they don't use this language, they're just using the, well, we're not left nor right. And we're fiscally conservative and socially liberal. I'm like, no, like, you know, listen, I understand libertarianism is a thin political philosophy, but because it's a thin political philosophy, it needs to be, you know, subset to a higher set of principles. It needs to be subset to virtue, to reason, to common sense. And if we can't have, you know, like, we're not talking about what denomination religion that you should be a part of. We're not talking about, like, you know, if you put your kids in private school or homeschool them, or, I mean, there's so many things that, yeah, like, we should not be pushing certain preferences on people. This isn't a preference. This is, like, the basis of a libertarian legal order, is that, like, it's the non-aggression principle. It's like, if you believe in that, that you should not initiate violence against peaceful people, what aggression has a fetus committed? What aggression has a baby committed? Just by existing? Well, you put it there. Like, you, I mean, except in the instances of rape, and even then, the baby didn't put themselves there. At no point is that, like, some people say it's a parasite, like a hostile invader. Like, the baby,
I hate that.
The baby had no agency in finding themselves there at all. And you don't have the, like, listen, you have a right to, you know, once the baby has been delivered, to be like, I don't want to raise it and, you know, give it up for adoption. That's fine. But you don't have a right to, just because someone is inconveniencing you, right? It'd be like, if someone, it's not even a stowaway, right? They had no agency in being there. If someone just, like, by no will of their own ends up on my plane, right? And I'm flying the plane. I find that they're there. Well, I have a right to kick them off my plane as soon as I land the plane. But I can't be like, you know, 5,000 feet in the air and be like, oh, my property, push them out. Like, right. That doesn't work that way. Yeah, unless they're communists. But that's different.
There's got to be some virtue, man. It's very important. And I agree with you. You know, it's, you know, we can talk all day, and this we get into all these arguments over the, you know, people doing crack on the schoolyard. And like, there's all these crazy arguments from these, like, wildly, like,
oh yeah,
like autistically, like, principled libertarians. But it's like at some point, man, like, your principles are just going to get you or your children killed, man. And I'm not ever going to let that happen. Like, I'm not going to put my family in danger just because I think people should be allowed to smoke crack on a schoolyard. You know what I mean? Like, that's insane to me, man. And like, and so, like, we really need to think about these things. And something else that I talk about a lot too is, like, you know, people get mad at me. Well, aren't you an ANCAP? I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, in my heart, I'm an ANCAP, but I'm running to govern the United States of America. Do you understand that, like, I'm running on a platform that A, has to resonate with people, B, has to be principled because I'm a principled guy, and C, like, has to address the fears of the people that you want to vote for you, right? Like, yeah, that's a huge thing that is missed in libertarian ideology. That's why I call myself a populist. I'm a populist, okay? Like, and I don't care who gets mad at that, like, ugly word or that dirty word in libertarian circles. But the truth is, like, populism is literally just addressing the fears of the electorate. I mean, that's what populism is. That's the most basic definition of populism. And, like, if you're not going to do that, like, no one's going to listen to you or vote for you or give you the time of day. And so, like, I have to think about it in terms of that. And I did, you know, when I did the Libertarian Christian Caucus and the Pro-Life Caucus interviews, I did that. And I did get an endorsement from the Pro-Life Caucus as the only truly pro-life candidate in the Libertarian Party today. I got that endorsement, but I said the same thing. I said, look, when we were talking about the immigration debate, they're like, well, aren't libertarians open borders advocates? And I'm like, sure, I guess, but like, 6 million people came across the Texas border last year. Okay. And like, do you think that's good for us? Do you think that's good for a society of people that want to have their own, like, sovereign nation? Because that's not how you keep a sovereign nation. In fact, only 1.5 million Nazis invaded Poland, and we had 6 million people come across the Texas border last year. You're going to tell me that's not an invasion? It's kind of an invasion to most people in the United States. Even if I don't think it's an invasion, the vast majority of the country, you know, even like moderate Democrats are like, we can't have immigration like this. This is not good, you know? And so it's wildly unpopular, and you're running to govern these people, and they want to see some kind of, like, protections. And so I've said very clearly that as a libertarian, I think if a federal government should exist or has to exist, that it should only exist to protect the rights of the citizens that live in their nation. And you know, one of those rights has to be the right to life. It full stop has to be the right to life. That's probably the most important one that they could protect. And so, you know, maybe that makes me different than other libertarians, and I'm okay with that, you know. And I had this conversation with Jeff Deist on my show, not to name drop. I love Jeff. I'm a huge fan of Jeff Deist, but he came on my show and I said, you know, people are saying you're not a libertarian because you're saying this, Jeff. And he said, who cares? I don't care. Don't call me a libertarian then. What does it matter? These are all labels that don't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. What really matters is that the principles and the fact that, you know, you're saying them the way that you believe them. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say them the way that I believe them. And you know, should we somehow get elected by some crazy stroke of luck in 2024, these are the things I'm going to do. And I promise to do them. So, you know, and when it comes to the federal abortion ban, I know that the president doesn't necessarily have the power to do that. But you do have the power to do a lot of other things, like, you know, nominate Supreme Court justices and other justices around the country. You have the opportunity to end all executive order decrees that have anything to do with this, which there are a lot, including, you know, this funding of Planned Parenthood. You have the opportunity to either executive order that stops or veto any spending bill that comes across your desk. So these are all things that I'd be dedicated to doing, and in fact, be the only candidate that will be dedicated to doing these things. So,
Yeah. I mean, what you said there reminds me of I pulled up here to remember the episode number, but episode 39 of my new podcast with LCI was titled Why I'm Not an Anarchist, which was basically to say, it was like, listen, and we said this at the top of the show, like, ultimately what I lead with is my faith in Jesus Christ. I lead with Christ is King. I'm going to follow what he says. Now, I think that has tremendous overlap with libertarian anarcho-capitalist political theory, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to religiously or dogmatically go like, oh, well, now listen, I also think a lot of people are just wrong about the theory, but even if they were right, I'd be like, okay, well then I'm just not an ANCAP on that issue. Yeah. Like, because that's not my ultimate loyalty. My ultimate allegiance is not to Murray Rothbard or to, Bastiat or to Mises, or it's to Christ. It's ultimately right. To Christ. And then down from there, my family. And then, down from there, I think libertarianism is libertarianism to me is more of a means than an end. It's right. Like libertarianism is what we used to get to the society that we want, but it's like they're not the ultimate, they're not the only, again, we keep saying this. It needs virtue. It needs something beyond that. There was a question in the comments that as we're starting to come to the close here, I feel like this would be a good thing to answer. How will making abortion illegal stop abortions? How is it different than gun control, the war on drugs, prohibition, et cetera? And I think this kind of ties into the whole conversation about are we really consistent libertarians or anarchists? It's like, listen, in an ANCAP society, we understand how this all works. We don't live in that. We have states. So it's like, are we saying we should abolish all laws? Like, should we not have laws against murder? Should we not have laws against theft because we're against the state doing it? Like, I get the heart of what Morgan's asking here, but I feel like, the problem with the war on drugs is that there is no violation of anyone's rights if they're just shooting up drugs in their own private property.
I mean, I could take this. This is a really easy argument. And the truth is when people die by guns, we don't prosecute the guns. We prosecute the person who committed a murder. Okay.
Yeah.
When people die from drugs, typically it's by their own hand and it sucks, but we don't prosecute anybody. I'm against the war on drugs. Obviously, I think it's one of the most failed policies in the history of our country, next to the family law system and maybe the Department of Education. But I 100% would promise I will never ever put forth a national ban on firearms to stop murder. But I will not, and I'm gonna be very clear here. I absolutely will not make murder legal. Okay, and right now murder is illegal. Today, murder is illegal, and that's okay. You think that's okay, right? There's a federal ban on murder, in case you're wondering. You can go to federal prison for certain kinds of murders. That's the truth, right? So why is it okay to murder a child just because they're not born yet? Is that okay? Or should a murderer who murders a child that's unborn yet face the same consequences as somebody who murders an adult? This is a completely different argument. We're arguing apples and oranges here. You're talking about a federal ban on a property because someone's been murdered. Like, that's a completely different thing than prosecuting the murderer, which we do already. And so, there's already laws in every state too, where if you kill a pregnant person, you get a double homicide charge. Okay. Yeah. So why is that okay, but not if a doctor does it at the hospital? Like, no, prosecute the murderer. Doctors that murder babies should be prosecuted for murder because they murdered a baby. I don't want the practice, litigate, if it's a private practice, but I'm not going to go in and tell the hospitals everybody in the hospital's got to go to jail, or the whole medical industry, oh, we got to shut down the medical industry. Like, that's what you're arguing is the same thing. No, I don't want a federal ban on weapons because people get murdered. I don't want a federal ban on drugs because people die from drug overdoses. I want a federal ban on murder, which we already have. I just want that to extend to babies that are not born yet. That's the argument. That apples and oranges argument is, there is no overlap there. It's completely separate arguments, entirely separate.
Right.
I do want to say that I love you, Morgan Rigg. You're great, man. Morgan's cool. He's a cool guy. If you haven't ever met him in person, he's great.
I've interacted with him a lot on social media. I do like Morgan. One thing we can close on here, I think, that ties into this is that you talk a lot about the like Title IV stuff and how like the state has clearly like an agenda against the family. And I think abortion ties into that as well. I think we as libertarians need to be just like read the room and decide that we're not going to carry water for the regime. We're not going to be useful idiots for the people who hate us. And that's kind of what changed my mind on the border, because I used to be more of like the, I guess open borders is better than closed borders kind of, you know, on the libertarian thing. And I'm still kind of like, you know, now I'm kind of more in the middle there, because I'm like, I don't know, like it's getting crazy. And I'm also because, and then my other concern is like, it seems like this is targeted. Like, it seems like this is all connected. Like, they are doing everything they can to sabotage American families, to disincentivize people to get married and stay married and have kids and keep their kids in the home and things like that. And while this is going on, they're then importing a bunch of other people from across the world as they're destabilizing their homes through the war on drugs and through, you know, military operations, intelligence agency operations. It's like, so we can see all this is going on. And then you're saying the libertarian position needs to be that we just need to be like, well, it sucks, but we can't do anything about it because it would violate our principles. I'm like, you know what? Like, if our principles lead us to supporting what the state is doing, we need to backtrack and figure out where we went wrong. That is an intuition that leads me, is that we should never be, repeating what the regime wants us to repeat. We should never be, handing them with a silver platter the consent to do things that they want to do. We should always be wary of that. And so whether it's abortion, whether it's, these family laws and whatnot, whether it's the border, we need to realize that there is a war against the family. I know that's something that you've talked a lot about as a family person. So maybe talk a little bit about that part of your platform here before we close out.
Well, first of all, anytime you see yourself agreeing with the FBI, the regime, the cathedral, or the CIA, you might want to question why you're agreeing with them. Anytime. Right. I mean, I don't care what it is. They could be like, poodles are the greatest dogs ever. And I'd be like, I think maybe we got to genocide the poodles, you know? And I mean that. I just, it's so hard for me to hear anything from these people and believe it. But yeah, look, there's an absolute targeted attack on the family in the United States. Look, I want to preface this with, I'm not a white nationalist at all. I don't think that our country has to be a white country. Okay. And I know that some people who follow me might be mad at me for saying that. And a lot of people who follow me would be like, yes, you do. But the truth is that, the great replacement is not a Nazi or white nationalist talking point. It's happening in front of your face right now. It's absolutely 100% happening. It is not a conspiracy theory. And there's so many avenues under which they're attacking this, and they're doing it on purpose. Let me ask you something. America is the greatest military power on earth. Okay. In the history of earth. There is no debating that. It's undebatable. Okay. We're the wealthiest nation. We're one of the youngest nations, okay? Do you think that evil and bad people wouldn't see that and want to take over the power? Do you think that that's not happening today in the United States? Look, half of the elected officials in our state, our house today, okay, have dual citizenship, okay? Many of them with Israel, okay? Almost all of them are funded by AIPAC, okay? The American-Israeli PAC. Okay. Almost all of them, like 90% of them. It's insane. Okay.
And by the way, I'm Jewish. Josh is part Israeli. So don't even come at us with the dumb anti-Semitism.
I don't even care. I don't even care about the anti-Semitism moniker anymore. I got a Gaza poster behind me. I've been this way for a long time. I think that Zionism is absolutely disgusting, but there's a whole other aspect to it that nobody talks about, but it's deeper than that. That's the Zionism. I rail on Zionism and the Israeli state and how they've controlled our politics and our war mongering and all this stuff for so long. And it's true. It's undebatable. I'll still man that argument anytime anybody wants to have that debate with me live. I can guarantee you that Israel controls our government and has for a long time. And I'll bring the receipts if anybody wants to show up. But the truth is that, you know, the absolute invasion at the southern border 100% is focused and targeted and on purpose. In 1971, they passed Title 40, the Social Security Act. If you aren't familiar with that, what it does is for every 88 cents that a state spends on family law system, not just child support, not just child support enforcement, not just, you know, taking dads to jail, not just mediation, not just home evals and all this stuff. Everything. For every 88 cents spent on those programs, the federal government gives them a dollar of taxpayer money back. Okay, so in that time, just since 1971, okay, we're talking, what, 50 years, right? 50 years? Yes, 50 years. Just in that time, we went from 1 in 60 children living in a fatherless home to 1 in 4. 1 in 4. That's an astronomical climb. Between that and the war on drugs and the war on guns and the clear displacement of foreign immigrants, the constant sending of money overseas to countries that give us nothing in return, they're absolutely trying to break down the family unit. And, you know, there's so many different conspiracies I could go off on about why this is happening, but let's just use one that's very clear that was told to us in the 70s when Yuri Bezmenov defected from the KGB in Russia. He showed up here. He said, look, I work for the propaganda arm of the KGB. The communists are 100% invading your country right now through all of your institutions, your schools, your public libraries, your newsrooms, your politicians, all of them. They're all being infiltrated. And part of that is to break down the family. Look, communism can't exist in a country that has strong family ties and strong faith. It cannot exist. That's why they had to kill and excommunicate Orthodox Christians in Russia when they did the revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution. It absolutely had to be done because the Orthodox were too strong for communism. Okay, they knew that they could not take over this country, the communists, who used to, by the way, we used to relegate them to basements in little secret circles to talk about their communist ideals. They're now marching on our streets and telling us they're going to kill our landowners and our business owners, okay, publicly every day on the news. Okay, so he wasn't lying. It was happening. It's happened. They had to destroy the family. They had to attack faith. They had to replace the culture that we had here, or they weren't ever going to be able to bring communism about. Now, let me ask you something. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're saying I'm wrong, but if I'm right, oh no, sorry. If I am wrong, would it look any different?
No.
Would it look any different? Would we be feminizing our boys? Would we be stomping on Christian flags in the streets? Would we be putting up Baphomet statues at the state house? No, they're doing it on purpose to destroy your faith, to destroy your family, and to take over your government and you know, pilfer your wealth and pilfer your property and eventually probably line you up against the wall. And it's time we had somebody who's brave enough to stand up to him and tell him no more. And I'm that guy.
Absolutely. Josh, this has been fun. I think it's a great place to come to a close here because I think that is the strongest part of your message. Your platform ties everything together. And I think if you're a person of faith, if you're a conservative or someone who, you know, understands the problems going on with our culture here, then that message should resonate with you. Josh, you have your website up there, joshuasmith2024.com. Go ahead and give any other plugs you want to give here. You know, tell people about, you know, if you want to make a pitch for delegates, tell people about LP National, the convention coming up, and then we'll wrap up.
Sure. So we got the convention coming up in May in DC. If you're a part of the party, it's getting kind of late to become a delegate now. So hopefully if you haven't become a delegate and you still have a state convention coming up, get your state convention, become a delegate, come vote for us. If you want to support the campaign, go to joshuasmith2024.com. You can do several things there. You can donate money. Listen, we cannot run a campaign without money. Okay. I've been running this campaign bare bones, shoestring budget on purpose. I didn't want to take a bunch of money should we not get the nomination, but we're getting really close now. We do need money for the national convention to set up hospitality suites, talk to delegates, try and get people to turn our way so that we can get on the ballot. And if we do get on the ballot, we want to have money to run a full campaign after that through November. So please, we can't exist without money. Listen, even if I'm not your candidate, go to the candidate that you like and donate money to them. They can't do it without you. The Libertarian candidates just cannot contend with the two old parties without money. So do that. You can also sign up to be a volunteer. We need all the volunteers we can get. You can sign up for the email list. You can watch our videos, read a platform, all those good things there. You can check me out on Break the Cycle Tuesday and Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. Central Time. And you can find that on YouTube at Fight the Despots, youtube.com/Fight the Despots, or on Rumble at Break the Cycle JS, I believe. You know, I put out a lot of content there and all that stuff, but you know, I think most importantly, what I want to say on this podcast to end this one is thank you guys so much for listening to us. Christ is King. Jacob, you're the man. I'll check you later.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh, for coming on. Always a blast. Appreciate what you're doing out there. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And yeah, until I talk to you guys again, which should be actually have another podcast. We have two more podcasts this week. I believe we have one tomorrow. That'll be with Brian Nichols, and then we have one on Thursday with Ezra Wierick, if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. So make sure you tune in for those. But thank you everybody for listening, and until then, until I talk to you again, live at peace, live for Christ.